Comencem el bloc de paràsits, un altre problema doncs, de salut. I en aquesta ocasió doncs, tindrem una, primer de tot una xerrada per part de la doctora Betty Faliex. Ella és investigadora de la Universitat de Perpinyà i professora. I el doctor Pierre Sazal, ell és també investigador, els dos en ecologia dels paràsits, i el doctor Pierre Sazal és, treballa en el CNRS a Morea. La presentació la faran en anglès, si no m'equivoco, i després si teniu alguna pregunta al final, després de la discussió...
El francès, diu, no sé el que s'estima més la gent.
O en francès, què preferiu? Francès? És. És.
Francès.
Sí. Les diapos estan... Les diapos són en anglès, no? Doncs en francès és bon.
Host, can we encounter parasites? The answer is everywhere. At least scientists think that there is at least one species of parasite for each free living species. At least one species of parasite, because there is lots and lots of examples that show that there is more than one species of parasite on one living organism, one species of living organisms. For example, on human being, up to 342 helminths, only helminths parasites, have been described to date. If For example, you have the well-known tinea, and another one, parasite, helminth parasite, which induced illness in all the tropical area on a human being. And if we want to have an idea of the whole number of parasites on human being, you have to add arthropod parasite, you have to add protozoan parasite, etc., etc. For the marine ecosystem, we have the most parasitized example with the case of the ocean sunfish Mola Mola, which harbored more than 4 genera of parasites. So, of course, parasites are everywhere, parasites are very numerous, and of course there is no real quantification of parasites because it's very, very difficult, but we have estimations. And according to different authors, the estimation vary from 50 to 80% of the total biodiversity on Earth. Now, who are parasites? Almost all living groups have parasites. Of course, the well-known are viruses, bacteria, protozoan, fungus, plants, invertebrates. But there is also vertebrates that are parasites. Two examples here. The first one on the left, the snub-nosed eel, which is a parasite here, the species of the heart cavity of the mako shark. And on the right, pearlfish, which is a parasite of the digestive tract of the sea cucumber. So you can see here, the posterior part of the sea cucumber, and here, this little part is the head of the parasite, of the fish, which parasite the sea cucumber. How do parasites live? Parasites depends on what species you study, could exhibit two kinds of life cycle. First, simple life cycle. And you have here a schematic representation of one simple life cycle of monogenean helminths. You have in the back here the some photograph of monogenean helminths exhibiting all simple life cycle. In simple life cycle, the parasite, the adult parasite, is on the host, and after reproduction, the parasite release eggs on the outside. From the eggs emerge swimming larvae that can infect the host again. The same kind of host again. So here, the parasite needs only one kind of host to achieve its life cycle. Second, other parasites can exhibit complex life cycle. Here, the parasites need different kind of host to complete his life cycle. The adults of parasites are on or within the host that we name final host. Then after reproduction, parasites release eggs in the outside, and from these eggs emerge some swimming larvae which enter in another kind of host which we name first intermediate host. Then there is most of times an asexual multiplication within the first intermediate host, release of lots of other swimming larvae that can infect another kind of host named second intermediate host. Then there is most often a relation of predation between final host and second intermediate host in the sense that final host eat the second intermediate host and infect by eating second intermediate host. So here you have some example, some photograph of different kinds of parasite that exhibit complex life cycle. Here, the parasite need different kinds of host to achieve its life cycle. This is important because if one of that host, for example, the first intermediate host is missing, the parasite can't complete its life cycle and the parasite died. So when modification of environmental condition lead to the disappearance of one of the hosts, the parasite die. What parasite can really do? By definition, being a parasite induce an effect on host. What kind of effect? Parasite can impact on individuals by modifying, for example, life history traits of hosts. Fecundity, growth, health status, condition, etc. Parasite can also impact on population, especially by regulating effects on host population. And parasite can also impact on ecosystems by modifying communities of hosts, biodiversity, relationships between species, food webs, and etc. So, with that in mind, and in the context of global change, we now try to explain you, to show you how anthropogenic activities such as global warming, pollution, aquaculture, species introduction, biodiversity can affect parasites, and what are the consequences of these changes on parasites on human health, ecosystems, host population, etc. First, global warming. The first thing I think I have to say is there is few data on global warming, but there is some evidence. Evidence of what? Evidence of water temperature increase, 0.3 degrees, in the last half century. Second, there is also a global increase, which is reported in the literature, of the number of diseases in the last 3 decades. This table shows you the results of a bibliographic analysis, which has been carried out on 9 groups of organisms, turtle, coral, mammals, of aquatic organisms, turtle, coral, mammals, urchin, mollusks, grass, decapod, shark and ray, and fish. And the author of the work collected from 1971 to 2002 the number of disease reported in the literature on each of these 9 groups. And what they show? They show that there is a significant increase of disease for 5 of this group: turtle, coral, mammals, urchin, mollusks. No effect on grass, decapod, and shark ray. And at the opposite, a decrease of disease in fish. This decrease in fish has been explained by another anthropogenic activity, that's to say the fishing pressure or overfishing. They say that overfishing decreased the density of fish, and this decreased density of fish lead to a decrease in disease because there is a decrease in transmission of disease. So they didn't link the decrease of disease in fish with global warming, but with another anthropogenic activities. Global warming increase disease, but also increase the severity of disease. Why? Because we know that on host, an increasing temperature lead to a decrease of oxygen rate and an increase of metabolic activity. These two features lead to respiratory stress on the host, and these respiratory stress on the host make host more sensitive to infection. On the parasite, on the other hand, the increased temperature increase growth rate, reproductive output, and decrease generation times of parasites. So, with these three features, we have an increase of severity of parasites. This is exactly the case of the white ring syndrome of black abalone, Haliotis. This syndrome is caused by a bacteria, and an intracellular bacteria. And on the left, you can see a picture of digestive epithelium of the abalone, and in which the big blue things are bacteria, and these bacteria cause the shrinkage of the body mass and the retraction of the mantle, and of course finally death. So this disease increase the severity of disease increase with temperature and lead to mass mortality in farmed as well as wild abalone. Here you have two photographs of two abalone. On the left, an infected one, and on the right, an infected one, which is very, very reduced, and which it seems that the organism don't fit to the shell because it's smaller than. Second, pollution, and here chemical pollution. Laferty investigates some different type of pollution and investigate the effect of this type of pollution on parasites. And he showed that heavy metals have a negative effect, significant negative effect on parasites, while eutrophication have a positive effect on parasites. What parasites? Most of the study deal with Coelophora. So, chemical pollution could increase parasites, some kind of parasites. Now, what are the effects on chemical pollution on parasites? Why? For example, we have different kind of example here on the effect of paper and pulp mill effluent on parasites. Parasites with simple life cycle or parasite with complex life cycle. And in simple life cycle, we paper and pulp mill effluent, for example, increase intensity of the parasites, but decrease the diversity. Because increase intensity because this kind of chemical pollution reduce host immunity, and decrease diversity because these parasites with simple life cycle are external parasites and they are affected as well as the host by the chemical pollution. Second, atrophic waters, for example, lead to a decreased intensity and decreased diversity of parasites. Why? Because of the loss of intermediate hosts and because also of possible higher predation of infected hosts with which are more sensitive to predation. And other kind of pollution, such as urban or industrial pollution, could lead to a modification of the parasite community. For the same reason, reduced host immunity and loss of intermediate host or higher predation on infected hosts. So we can't here tell you a tendency on what are the effects of chemical pollution on parasites. Depends on what kind of parasite, what kind of pollution. But all the authors agree to say that parasite, in that case, could be used as very useful tags for local condition. So, in that case, parasite can help to characterize local condition. Another point of recent concern is the biological pollution. Biological pollution, for example, feces from human, from pets, from domesticated animals, could be released in the environment, and from the environment, by runoff, for example, could reach coastal waters and contaminate coastal waters. And this contamination of coastal waters constitute a potential risk for human health. Three kinds of parasites, Cryptosporidium, Giardia, and Toxoplasma, are in this case. The life cycle you can see on the left is the one of Cryptosporidium, and it has been shown that the infective stage of Cryptosporidium, which is released in coastal waters, can accumulate within oyster, clams, cockle, mussels, and so on. And that people that eat this kind of bivalves can infect with that parasite. So parasite came from human pet and go again to human by the means of coastal waters.
Another anthropogenic activity that may lead to change in parasite community is aquaculture, that's well known around the Mediterranean coast. And what is usually seen is that there is a continual, the aquaculture is a continual source of disease transmission to closely related native species around sea, around farm cage. And one well-known example is the example of the spread of the white spot syndrome virus in surrounding native shrimps around the Peneus japonicus farm, and that infects the native Peneus monodon in most of the place where they are around the cages. Moreover, the use of chemical and antibiotics to prevent infection in aquatic farms may result in toxicity and to non-target population, including human, even if for the moment there are still not many studies on this point. And the waste is caused by the aquaculture also not only the feces of the animals in the cage, but also the pellets that are not eaten by the fish or the shrimps or whatever in the cage may cause some water pollution in the surrounding areas. And some studies showed also that the reduction of host genetic diversity in farms may favor the greater virulence of parasite in monoculture. So I will. There is a synthesis, bibliographic synthesis recently shown that this effect concerned mainly ectoparasites. Ectoparasites in blue, monogenians, which live on the gills of the fish or on the body of the fish, and that in most of the case, well, there's a lot of example with salmonids, but also with tuna and Seriola, yellowtail Seriola, and in most of the case. They were reported. These parasites were reported also in the wild population surrounding the cages. They are also, even if it's a real recent work, there are also other examples. And here in Spain, there are people working on this problem in the Sitja Bobadilla and Alvarez Pelletero. You may know most of these people. And we work on one example. It's the parasite, the monogenian parasite, who lives on the gills of the Alubina, the Anthracis labrax, and these are sea cage in Alicante region. And we have been there for working on these parasites with people there. And what we've seen that the increasing density usually for fish increase the stress. And increasing density because of the life cycle of the parasite. It's a simple life cycle that need only one host species, as Betty told you before. And this life cycle can be accelerated in the sea cage with high density, and will favor a parasite that also increase the stress, and it's a cycle, very quick cycle, and there is some cyclic explosion of simple life cycle parasite in this cage that need to be treated by the people farmers. What we have done with this parasite, which lives on the gills, you see, that's not a flower, but that's presentation of the gill of the fish with the parasite. And as soon as the egg is hatched, the parasite goes on the gills, at the bottom of the gill, because it's very small and needs to be protected from the water current through the gills. And then after several days, 5 to 9 days, the parasite climb, when he's growing, climb along the gills. And each time he climbs on the gills, there is big hooks that make some holes in the gill of the parasite or the fish. And you will see later the result of this infection of the gill of the fish, and then after about 20 days the parasite is adult and it's time to reproduce, it's time to lay eggs, and it's a better place at the top of the gill to spread eggs in all the water. And after 25 to 26 days the reproduction has been okay, and then many parasites come again and there is explosion in very few days. And what is important this kind of study to do, to know very well the life cycle of a parasite, and especially with the farmers, it's to adapt the way to control the parasite, because if you treat your fish at this time it's too late. So people have to be very careful to be sure that they treat the fish before the parasite is getting adult and can reproduce itself. So that's a way to also to protect the ecosystem by optimizing the treatment of the parasites. So you can see what is an explosion of parasite on the gills of one fish. You see all the black dots are parasite, and this is half an arc, branchial arc of one fish. So you can imagine the explosion of parasite in very few days. So we conduct a study on the gene expression to see what are the effects on the parasite, on the gene expression, especially the immunity genes of the fish. And we study some differential gene expression on innate immunity and adaptive immune response of the fish to experimental infestation. And we have seen that there is an increase in the spleen expression of the innate gene expression. There is a significant relationship with the increase of number of parasites on the fish. Moreover, what we have seen, there was no big difference for the TGF and TCR-beta genes linked to the immunity, but the gene, we recognized the innate response. We have seen that there was a peak of expression and an overexpression of this gene when the first parasite get onto the gills with the hooks, and that makes two big holes in the gills, but also when the parasite begin to climb on the gill to go up at the top of the gills, there is many hooks in the gills, and then there is another overexpression of the gene of immunity for parasite recognition. So this parasite, when you see when there have been, they are mature and there are thousand of parasites on one fish, there is a high mortality rate in the farm and big loss for production. For example, not on this model in Spain, but in Australia in 2000 on Lattes calcarifer, there was 500,000 Australian dollar loss in one farm in a few weeks. It was 200,000 tons of fish that die in a few days. So you can imagine that the problem that may that could have not only for the farmer but also all the fish dead in the water, that may induce some problem for the quality of the water. So there are need to treat with chemicals for this parasite, and there is a lot of different treatments with chemical in the sea farm, and most of these chemicals are released in the water around, and they can also accumulate on the flesh of fish. And actually, to my knowledge, there is not much study on the effect on the ecosystem or on the human health of these treatments of sea cage fish. So that could be a problem for new studies around, even if I think there's some economical problem of doing this kind of studies, but that's another problem for, I think, for scientists, it's to show the problems, and then that's not even more our problems to what they do with these kind of things. What we did also in Alicante with the friends in the University of Alicante, we have looked at the fish around the cage, not only the fish of the same species that they were in the cage, because there are some studies looking at the exchange of parasite between wild and farmed fish. And we have decided to study the fish that were not closely related to see what's going on with this fish. If there is some parasite going to the to this fish, or if there is some exchange, or what's going on. And globally, what we have shown that the most parasite from culture fish were not found on surrounding fish, different species. And that was because of parasite specificity. Most of the parasite can be on one host, but not on the other. That's why there was an absence of complex life cycle and simple life cycle on surrounding fish. And because culture fish eat only food pellets that they were given by the farmers. And so the complete life cycle, the complex life cycle cannot be achieved in culture fish because, as Betty told you, they need intermediate host, and especially the second intermediate host that need to be eaten by the fish to complete the life cycle. And as the fish eat only pellets, they won't ever be infected by a complex life cycle. But what we have seen that some complex life cycle that occur naturally in Trachyrus, were significantly more abundant in the control region, that means far from the cage, compared to the one surrounding the cage. And one interpretation was that, and we saw that when we dissect the fish, that the surrounding fish eat also pellets, and they completely change their alimentary habits. And the consequence on flesh quality for this fish, there are some studies showing that the lipid composition is different between wild fish eating pellets and wild fish eating natural food. So in this case, the presence of parasites on wild fish could be a way to see that they fed on natural prey and they are more in good condition. They are more good for food, or they are in good health and without surrounding the cage. So that's another vision of parasite. Another anthropic effect we wanted to address today was the effect of species introduction on parasite. And of course, when introducing one host species in an ecosystem, you introduce also its parasites, and that could spread to local population and induce some problem because of the relationship between host and parasite is always a long-term relationship at the evolutionary scale. And if you modify this relationship by introducing new species, you modify also this equilibrium between a parasite and its host. And parasite could play a key role in the success also. There are some examples that, but more rare, that they could play also a role in the success or the fail of introduced species. For example, an introduced species arriving in a place where there is parasite and which is very virulent to him would induce the fail of the introduction of the species. And parasites also have been shown to reduce the local diversity. And one famous example is the monogenic parasite of in the Aral Sea on the sturgeon, who induced the mass mortality of the spiny sturgeon following the introduction of the Caspian stellate sturgeon in the Aral Sea. The beginning of the 20th century. So what is important also when doing this kind of manipulation or manipulation for introduction, for whatever, is to know very well the parasitic fauna of the introduced species, but also the parasitic fauna of the local species. One model we use in Perpignan, and we study a lot, and because there are some problem with parasite, is the European eel. You all know the European eel that live in the rivers, reproduce in the Sargasso Sea in the Caribbean region, and they do 8,000 kilometers from the rivers from Europe to cross the Atlantic and go reproduce there. They die, and the larvae come across the Atlantic Ocean and recruit as angulas in the estuaries. You all know this. And there is many species of eels in the world, and they are very famous in many places, not only for glass eel as angulas, but in Japan they are very famous, but also for leather made out of eels. And what we have seen the last 50 years is that there is a decrease, a dramatic decrease of most eel species in the world. And you can see that the level, for example, of juveniles, that means the glass eels, the angulas, they go to the estuaries, they are at level about 1 to 5% of what they were in the mid-80s. And when you see the silver eels are the adults that go across the Atlantic Ocean, and there are many studies showing that there is a dramatic decrease also in 20 years, 25 years of the level of silver eels. Of course, there are many reasons. Hydropowers, you see, there's some scale for fish to come across the rivers, but there are also on the way back when the big eels try to go back and reach the Sargasso Sea, they are just cut in pieces. Of course, over exploitation, and that's mainly the first reason that is exposed when there is a problem, and that's the first thing we can manage between brackets. It's easy to say we cut the fishermen level, but there are other problems like pollution and pathogen, of course. And one of the pathogen is the nematode Angelicola crassus, who lives in the gas bladder of the fish. And this parasite has been introduced in the 80s from Japanese eels, because it was very interesting to have Japanese eels or to export European eel, and finally the parasite get into Europe. I will pass very quickly on the life cycle. You see, it's a complex life cycle with the parasite in the gas bladder and with a copepod as an intermediate host. And what we see in Europe in 20 years, you see all the infestation. The parasite arrived in Germany in the 80s, 81, 82. And in 20 years, all Europe and North Africa was infected with very high level, because almost 80% in some place of eels are infected. And we have conducted a study in Perpignan to see what are the consequences of this parasite of eel. Of course, there is many work showing hypertrophy of the spleen, the condition of the fish, the swimming performance. Some studies show that the silver eel infected were not able to swim the 8,000 kilometers to reach the Sargasso Sea. And you all know that species that not reproduce anymore will die in very few years. And finally, Betty will present you, we present you all the worst part of the parasite. But there is some example that can think that make us think that parasites are maybe beneficial for the ecosystem.
Okay. Parasites are not only bad, but also can be beneficial. For example, they are part of and can promote biodiversity. They can be indicators of restorated ecosystem. Authors scientists tell us that in restorated ecosystem there is more an increase of parasites, for example, and could be seen as potential ecosystem engineers. So I want just to show you one example of one parasite which is beneficial. This parasite is an almond parasite, and it infects a bird, which is the final host. The first intermediate host is a snail, and the second intermediate host is a gamar, a crustacean gamar. And what can do the parasite in that case? In this place, there is actually two species of gamar. First species, the red one, second species, the yellow one. The two species are in St. Patrick, and there is a competition between the two species. But the red one is more competitive than the yellow one. So, in long term, in the future, if there is no parasite, the yellow species could disappear. When the parasite come in the place, the parasite can infect the two species of gamar, but the parasite prefer the red one. So the parasite, by preferring the red one, can permit the coexistence of the two St. Patrick species, and in that case can help to maintain biodiversity. So until now we speak about parasite for worse, but maybe for the future we will speak about parasite for better. Just for the optimistic note. Sorry.